Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Welcome to Real World News with Chara Ann Tappan and Reggie Kearney, bringing you commentary on headline news from all over the world. Your comments are welcome by dialing area code 646-200-3148 or join us in the chat room. Real World News, news for us, by us, and that affects us all. Let's get this show started.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Reginald Kearney, one of the co-hosts of this great show here that we host every other Tuesday night, Real World News. And I have with me this evening my trusted co-host, Cheryl Tappan. Cheryl, how are you doing tonight?
Evening, Reggie. I'm tired, but I'm mostly sick and tired.
I think we all are. We all are sick and tired. You know, in light of the recent events of racial tension in Charlottesville, Virginia, and with the shakeups in the White House, and there have been many, there shouldn't be any doubt that people all over the country are feeling the uncertainty of that future. And that goes without saying. I think we all are trying to hands up in the air, trying to figure out what's going on. And then we got a tug of war going on between the left, which is the Democrats, and the right, the Republicans. And there's no question that many Americans have witnessed lack of leadership and turmoil that the Trump administration are feeling the spoils of racial divide and bigotry. Is this country leaning to the left or to the right in its core values? Is it a right or left issue as to where this country stands at its best? And Shaw, how would you like to answer that question? Is this a right or left issue?
You know what? I've been thinking about that, you know, ever since we announced the topic of the show. And honestly, I don't think right now we're right or left. I think there have been periods where, you know, I get this image in my mind of, you know, good old-fashioned tug of war. You know, the country's morals and soul is the red ribbon in the middle. And you got the left on one side, the right on the other side, pulling for dominance. But, when I went back and looked at what they call the Republican National Committee's autopsy report after their 2012 defeat, they're completely off script. You know, at that point, they were figuring out how did they lose and what do they need to win. And some of their ideas at the time were to move left on the issue of same-sex marriage, move left on the issue of immigration, since Hispanic voters will not really, you know, hear any candidates that they think would hate them, you know, certainly wouldn't vote for them or support them, to really strengthen the party's grassroots and ground level game, if you will, and to create a long-term presence in the minority community, which you would assume meant a positive presence in order to get their votes, and to nominate candidates who won't scare anybody. And it seems as though somebody has hijacked the right and their agenda. And I would say we're neither right nor left right now. We're some other beast. And the fact that there's more things going on now which are akin to a fascist state than either conservative right or liberal left, I think speaks volumes. And it boggles my mind that there isn't a greater outcry, even from, you know, Republicans. You can be a Republican and you can be a conservative and not support the shit that's going down right now. It makes no sense. You know, basically eliminating the Human Rights Commission or significantly defunding them, you know, deregulating the EPA so that anybody can dump whatever they want in the water, basically allowing corporations to poison citizens, which I consider traitorous. It just defies all logic. And, you know, I think that we do have a third party. We have a third secret party, and that's for the corporations, the lobbyists, the wealthiest, because those are the only people right now truly benefiting from I wouldn't even say Trump's administration, because it's not stable enough to be an administration. It's more like Trump's reign, if you will, and hopefully those days are numbered.
Well, I don't know. You make a great point there. We are kind of stuck in a moment in time right now, and it's really hard to see which way this country is going. But the thing that's happened with, you know, let's just remove everything that you have stated, you know, and look at it a different way. With the right and with Trump and his rhetoric, we see this country moving to moving into a direction that's not very healthy, okay? When you look at what went on in Charlottesville, what happened there was a very unhealthy picture of what this country is coming to. Okay, and when you look at so-called the alt-right marching down the street with picket torches, you know, hollering, "Jews will not replace us," this country is headed in the wrong direction. Now, granted, the alt-right and all the other little people that follow them, and the father Nazis and all these other hate groups, are a very small minority. They still are making a lot of noise. And they are, in a way, being drowned out by the voices of reason and people that don't accept hate in this country. But we are at a crossroads in this country right now. And leadership is definitely not helping us move into another direction.
Mm.
What are your thoughts about that?
What leadership? Well, he's certainly not a leader for the entire country. I think he's made it very, very plain that he is only representing the interest. Well, on the face of it, he appears to only be representing those people who voted him in, rather than embracing the mantle of president of the entire United States and all of its citizens. He's clearly picked a line. He's, you know, there's a line on the sand, and he has picked the side that he's on. The fact that he didn't willingly denounce the alt-right, the supremacists, the KKK, the hundreds of people marching down the street screaming old Nazi slogans like blood and soil, that should have turned his stomach that this happened on his watch in the country that he's supposed to be the father of, that he's supposed to take care of. Unbelievable. And I say that he gave that second statement unwillingly. You know, he read it very well, better than I expected that he would have been able to read it, quite frankly. But, you know, clearly that left a bad taste in his mouth because, you know, little Junior had his temper tantrum, had to go back on the next day and show himself, as he did, you know, good guys on that side. And even the way he described one side versus the other, he's like, you know, there may be bad guys, you know, with the KKK and the supremacists, but they're very bad guys on the left. And I don't even understand how the notion of anti-fascism could be spun to be a bad thing. That makes no kind of sense to me, because this country has always, for the most part, been anti-fascist. And, you know, to see veterans of World War II, at least one, wearing their caps, some guy from the 82nd Airborne, Sieg Heiling with the wrong arm, mind you, but doing that nonetheless after having fought in a war where he fought against Nazis, it makes me wonder, you know, was he a sympathizer back then, or did he become that when he came back home? But, you know, It's truly despicable and reprehensible, and there's no excuse for it. Whether you are a conservative, a Republican, or a leftist, at the end of the day, we're American, and those values and that position has no place in this country. And let's call a spade, you know, he has 31%, 35% support in this country, max. I'm not giving him more than that. But I will say that there is a rather large percentage of the country that is passively indifferent. And they are almost more dangerous than those yelling out in the streets, because it was passive indifference that allowed the Nazis to take over Germany. You know, it doesn't matter to me, so it doesn't impact me, so it's not my problem, until it is. And I don't understand why there isn't a larger outcry for, say, veterans organizations. Veterans fought for the country. You know, they volunteered for service, whether it was the Navy or the Army or whatever other branch there may be, and they fought. They gave blood and limb for this country. And most of their families are Republican. Where is their outcry when he is cutting funding for their medical health and well-being? That Kool-Aid must be real strong, because I don't get it.
Well, could it be that we're getting very synthesized by everything that's taking place in our country at this time, and we're just like skipping down the highway, whistling a song, and not really concerned? You know,
like I said, passive indifference.
Yeah, whatever it's going to be, will be. And I think that's where the real issue lies. That we, like you said, we're becoming passive. And people who should be speaking out, I agree, are not speaking out. You know, it just really bothers me that we have to, endure this mess that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's very sad that this country is going this way. You know, I've been looking at some of the, you know, postings on Facebook, you know, the different articles and stuff that I'm privy to. We have, like today here in Arlington, Virginia, a priest admitted that he had a past life where he was a member of the KKK.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know. He faced charges for burning a cross in an African American couple's lawn in College Park, Maryland in the 70s. In 82, he was convicted of that. You know, he had to pay $23,000 in damages, but the thing was that $23,000 was never paid. And this week, the Archdiocese said today that they would pay the $23,000 to the victim's family. But this is a strange thing that really, really got me. And about he served a 90-day jail sentence in 1977 for his actions. And then, I guess God stepped into his life, and he made a drastic change. I'm trying to find when that date was. In 1984, he was ordained in the Diocese of Reno, Las Vegas, in Tony's hair area out there. Okay, the Catholics are doing it up in 1984. But it seems like he had a come to Jesus meeting in 7 years, and then he was ordained in the diocese, okay? Okay, people do repent, okay? People do change, attempt to change. But I can't believe that this man who garnered so much hate in his lifetime would, in 7 years, be a changed man.
Well, look, Scott Shepherd did it.
It can happen, bro. But, you know, it's just now he says he had, with the actions that took place in Charlottesville, he felt it was a need to come out and talk. Now, he's taken a leave of absence from the Diocese of Arlington we don't know how long, but he is going to step away from the ministry, okay? Mm-hmm. But that just shows what's been going on in this country. And, like, somebody posted that, hey, they come in all different job shades and everything, you know, they wear all different kinds of clothes. You know, so you don't know who is masking as a hate-filled individual, okay? Then we had another article where, you know, a gentleman was identified as being a Marine, you know. I believe he got less than a dishonorable discharge, But, you know, how many people in the armed forces carry that kind of passion about hate?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just all around us, and it's like this country is just going down a slippery slope when it comes to hate. And like you said, nobody's speaking up about it.
It's
no one.
we there's some strange business going on in this country right now. And, you know, every once in a while I joke and say I feel like we're living in an alternate universe. And, you know, the interesting thing is there was this genius kid who studies astrophysics and the like. And he theorized, not in response to everything that's going on, that's just a coincidence, but he theorized when they split an atom during one of the recent tests, well, not recent, let's say, you know, within the last 10 years, that it pushed us into an alternate universe that is so similar to our own that we don't recognize that we're in an alternate universe, that only subtle things were changed. And, you know, I think back to that article and I say, you know what, in light, that is the only thing that makes this Orwellian bullshit make sense. You know, that, you know, you can have a lone Muslim attack somewhere in the country, which is still a minority compared to the attacks that we've had from the alt-right white supremacists in this country. They've committed more terrorist acts in this country over the last 100 years, over the last 10 years than Muslims have. Let's just be straight about that. You know, the immediate response to that is let's have a ban. But then we have a shootout in Columbine and Sandy Hook, and the response to that is more guns. You know, and the Hobby Lobbies and, you know, you have Occupy Wall Street, which was not considered a populist movement at the time, and it was. Then you have the alt-right and Trump, and they consider themselves populist. Meanwhile, they don't have the numbers. So there's this, you know, and then the notion that Antifa is suddenly a bad name. Like, when did anti-fascism become bad? And I don't see any Republicans or anybody on the right saying we don't support fascism, but they're using the term Antifa as if it has this negative connotation. And like the more they use it, the more it becomes a part of the lingua franca, and you can see it, people relishing using this term Antifa as if it somehow imbues them with some greater intelligence than they actually have, and. It's just really bizarre, and I don't see the intellects of the company, right, of the country, right or left, speaking out about this. You know, protesting for your rights is bad. Protesting for civil rights is bad. Somebody gets shot by the police, just shut up and take it until it happens to one of theirs, whatever other group we're talking about. So, you know, I don't know if it's Monsanto's fault, they're putting something in our food. You know, I don't know if it's the fault of the dumbing down of the country, as we know has been done, has been an active, I believe, a very active agenda point, as you see history books being edited every single year to minimize certain aspects of our history, like the civil rights movement or what really happened, the fact of slavery, et cetera. They were not volunteers. They didn't choose to do it. They weren't happy workers. They weren't well cared for. But there's this agenda now to spin everything on its head, on its axis. And I don't understand why more people aren't calling it out.
I just think that, like you said, we become passive and we're sympathized to the happenings around us. I mean, it's like people are getting tired. It's like they're wore out, and they're like throwing their hands in the air. Well, look, we got to pay for this show, so let's recognize our sponsors at this time. And we'd be right
Have
back
you ever passed
more.
A sister or brother and was taken by their beautiful
it
skin and hair? Well, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. And that secret is Shades of Africa. Shades of Africa carries products for that beautiful hair and beautiful skin. They carry a wide range of natural hair and skincare products, as well as aroma oils, burning oils, authentic African jewelry, art, and artifacts. So for all your fine African products, visit Shades of Africa in two locations, in the city of Corona at 114 East 6th Street, and in the city of Long Beach at 1001 East 4th Street. You can contact them by phone in Corona at area code 951-284-7888 and in Long Beach by dialing area code 562-436-2210. Shop in person or online by going to www.shadesofafrica.com. That's Shades of Africa, A-F-R-I-K-A. When shopping in person or ordering by phone, mention Hot Topics Talk Radio for 15% off your purchase. Shades of Africa, for the mind, body, and spirit. The Urban Sentinel, providing news that gives you the whole truth and nothing but the truth. The Amazing Urban Sentinel, featuring national news, community news, entertainment, sports, business, and national events. For all the news 7 days a week, visit their website at urbansentinel.com. The Amazing Urban Sentinel, in digital and in print, in English and in Spanish. For additional information, ad placement, and print delivery, contact Reginald Kearney at area code 301-661-3989. The Urban Sentinel, where news is the only priority.
Good evening and welcome back. This is Real World News. So, Reggie, I was thinking to myself, as I usually do, again, something I had said earlier is that there needs to be another party, or there actually is another party, and it's a party for the wealthy. You know, you look at the deregulation that Trump has attempted to push or push through. It only benefits one group, and that's the wealthy. And I don't mean, you know, the wealthy family that owns a $2 million home. I mean the one percenters who own Nestle. You know, I don't understand, and I say that a lot because I genuinely mean it and I strive to, why some of those people who voted for Trump in middle America, let's say, don't rally and cry out against him. You know, look at Bundy's, you know, they own land, right? Their land could be negatively impacted by what he's allowing with the deregulation of the EPA, with fracking, with Nestle stealing all the water on the West Coast, and things of that nature. Why aren't they speaking out? You know, there was a notion at some point that government regulation was necessary in order to protect the public interest. And now it's clear that this man, because I hate to refer to him as president, has no interest in protecting the public interest, unless to him, the only public that matter are the wealthy. I think he knows who butters his bread, and that's the wealthy, and that's the alt-right right now. Unfortunately, it seems he may have made an enemy out of Bannon. We'll see, because it looks like Bannon's turning against him. But we'll see how far that goes. But, you know, even these members of the alt-right are going to be negatively impacted by the decisions that Trump is making. They aren't the wealthy. They aren't the elite. They aren't the one percenters. But psychologically, though, they are so wrapped up in their hate and their need to assert their dominance, their perception of dominance, that they're doing it at their own cost. They're cutting off their nose to spite their face.
Well, what you got to look at, it's not even about the wealth. It's not about the 1% of anything like that. It's about creating a society of whites only, okay? And that's what it all boils down to. These alt-righters, or whatever you want to call them, don't have a dime in their pocket, okay? You got to look at most of them are young 20-somethings and 18, 19-year-olds that are either flunking out of school or struggling to stay in school. They don't have jobs. And they hear this crazy message being led by the David Dukes and men that are much older, that and they have got into that psyche and they got them thinking that what they're doing is the right thing to perpetuate all this hate that's going, you know, has been perpetuated around the country through that group, okay? And so they really believe in this stuff, you know. And a lot of, like I said, not about wealth, because a lot of them come from economic backgrounds that, you know, are very unproductive. So they are turning to these organizations to find themselves, to find some self-worth, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's causing a lot of problems because, like I said, Trump has not really come out and when Charlottesville happened, he had an opportunity to come out strong against what happened, okay? And make a statement and act like he was the president of the United States, but he didn't. Like you said, he played both sides of the rope to try to satisfy and tease everyone. And when David Deuce came out hollering at him again, he comes back a day later, flip-flops again, then a third day later, flip-flops again. You know, because he's trying to appeal to his base. So what you have now, you have Bannon out of there. You have most of the people that he hired out of there. And Bannon is determined to continue on, because Bannon's thing would be to destroy destroy the capitalist system as it is now. You know.
I think
control in this country.
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't think he was trying to appease both sides. I think he was trying to appease one side. But I think we've inspired Tony to chime in. Tony, come on in.
Well, I'm not going to chime in, but I'm going to bring in some callers for you. You have a caller that has been holding from the 908 area. I'm going to bring him in. 908, you're on Real World News Radio with Chair Ann Chapin and Reggie Kearney. Go ahead. What's your name?
I'm anonymous.
Anonymous, huh?
Okay.
You don't sound anonymous.
Hello, Pat.
Hello, anonymous.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Yeah. Getting riled up.
Yeah.
Good to hear from you. I know who this is.
You do, huh? Hi, Reg.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm chilling.
So what do you have to add to the conversation, Miss Arrington?
Oh, you said my name. I'm anonymous, said, remember?
Yeah. Go ahead with your call.
I'm just listening. I came in on the, when Reggie, I guess Reggie was talking about the priest. Is that who you were talking about?
Yeah.
The priest just came out as a KKK member. 40 years ago?
Yeah,
that's where I came in. That's where I came in at. But I just want to say, you know, are we surprised at anything that's been happening since this administration took over? I mean, it campaigned on this campaign of hate. That's what got him elected. It wasn't policy. It was hate. They hated Hillary Clinton. So they didn't vote for her. So it was hate. Hate got him elected. Hate is what's driving his message. So, and, you know, it's one thing to have racist views, but it's another thing to have the power to implement those views.
You know,
so
I think that Trump is more of a narcissist than a racist. You know, I think he's a passive racist, but, you know, I think that he knows who his base is. He knows who got him elected, and he knows not to cross them, because I'll tell you one thing, liberals don't assassinate. Right. If you look at history, they've all been right wing wackos that have done that. And I think that if he crosses swords with the right, he puts himself at some serious risk. But God forbid, if you contest his will, you'll see him come out of his face like he did at that last press conference when he was acting so childish.
Well, you know, that's a point. But if you know anything about Trump's history,
I do, and
notwithstanding the lawsuit against his housing policies, But there was a period back in the 80s when Trump was trying to get casino money for his casinos from the government. And the government wouldn't help him. He went in front of Congress and testified, and he talked about Indians like they were dogs.
I remember that. Well, he was like, they don't look Indian, so they
right exactly. But so he, you know, his racist tendencies have always been there. The narcissist part of it was just like that just fueled it more. But he is what he is. Like Maya Angelou says, if a man tells you what he is, believe him.
Yeah.
You don't have to. You know, if he only has to tell you one time.
Well, let me amend my statement. I don't mean to say he's not racist, but I don't think he's rabid, foaming at the mouth, marching down the streets, screaming blood and soil, and carrying a tiki torch racist.
Well, none of those people are. None of those people are.
But he doesn't
are.
Have to do that.
None of those people are. That's the only way that they could express themselves. See, people like Trump and people like Jeff Sessions and people like Steve Mnuchin, who displaced all those people in California when he was foreclosing on their homes because they owed $2 on their mortgage. They were late $2, whatever. Those are the people that we really have. They don't have to do anything outlandish for us to hear about it because their hatred is fomented and articulated through what they do with their power.
Mm.
These people on the streets don't have any power.
Nope.
So they use what they have, what they have to use what they have. They don't have any power. So they use, you know, the tiki torch or whatever. It's kind of like David throwing a rock at Goliath. He used what he had. It wasn't because he didn't want to hate you. They can't use what Trump uses. See, the people like Trump are the people that we have to deal with every day, who own the pharmacies, who own the businesses, who own the stores, who you go into their store, they treat you like a dog. You go into their place of business, they throw your application in the garbage. You go in, those are the people who have the power to implement their policies over you. They don't have to talk.
Yeah.
They don't have to be loud because they have real power. The people who are out there screaming are the ones who are frustrated because they don't have power. They can't change anything unless they scream because that's the only way they get attention. So it's not the people on the street. It's not the people on the street that we should be afraid of. It's Jeff Sessions. It's Steve Mnuchin. It's people like Bannon. It's Stephen Miller. It's the people who have the power to put these silly policies into play that will perpetuate through generations. Because once Trump's gone, unless someone comes in there to get rid of his policies, they're going to remain.
Yeah.
They'll remain.
That's what Bannon's mission is.
Mm-hmm.
Destroy the country and make sure it stays in what his ideology is. Okay, and that's what he wants. But
he wants a civil war.
Yeah, well, we are in a civil war. We're not in a civil war where we got guns and tanks and riding down the street and shooting at each other. But technology has driven a civil war. We are in a civil war just because of the technology. You know, because and the ability for them to take control of the government. Okay, now, because the Democrats didn't do what they needed to do, that's why we're in this pickle we're in now. But one thing we got to be listening to and be aware of, there's a movement to try to make sure that the 2020 election doesn't take place, okay? Now, at least 50% of Republicans have said through polls, and you know, they could poll some of the people out in Kentucky or West Virginia and get these numbers, that they would understand if there wasn't an election in 2020 because of Trump's committee to investigate voter fraud, okay? So they're saying that if the questions aren't answered by 2020 concerning this and nothing is done to make sure people don't, vote more than twice, then they should cancel the election in 2020. So the talk is already being put out there. Okay, yeah. Look how he ran his campaign. Look at the things that have happened through his campaign. He set the groundwork. He pushed the agenda. He pushed the idea, and people accepted it. Look how they talk about fake news. Everything coming out, if it ain't Fox, it's fake.
Right, okay. Jay, I want you to stay on the line for a minute. Reggie, we also want to invite another caller calling from Minnesota, the 612 area code. I think his name is Michael. Would you like to join us?
Yes, good evening, everyone. How are you doing?
Good evening,
hey,
Michael.
How you doing,
welcome.
Michael?
Good. I think I'll probably come at this whole thing from a different perspective as a conservative. And this is someone who I used to be a liberal for a long time. But when we start talking about these things, what we're looking at information and how it can be manipulated. For example, most people aren't aware of the fact of Hillary Clinton's ties to the KKK through Robert Byrd and how important Robert Byrd was to both her and Bill Clinton. But the media, obviously, for obvious reasons, barely mentioned that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then completely minimized that. They didn't talk about how some of her former black employees talked about how her and Bill, when they got comfortable with certain, you know, black employees they had, they would casually use the N-word towards them if they felt like they would be able to keep it private. Now, the media barely talked about that at all. I barely heard anything about that. And why is that? This is where the whole fake news thing comes from, which is the obvious dynamic in this country is 90% of the media, especially amongst the major news networks, are clearly liberal, and they support the Democrat Party. And they cover Democrats, and they're hypercritical of conservatives and Republicans. So my thing is, I'm open to any critique of Trump if you want to. Only thing I say is, if you're going to do that, apply it equally to say, Barack Obama or to a Democrat. Like, no one talks about the fact that Obama deported more people to Mexico than any other presidential administration. That
yeah.
was not even mentioned.
No,
and of course, why was it not mentioned?
You're right.
And it's because it doesn't fit the narrative.
Well, it didn't fit the right's narrative.
No, it doesn't fit the left's narrative, because the narrative is only the right wants to deport people, and the left just wants to welcome everybody in here with open arms and use our southern border as a gigantic welcoming bridge to anybody.
Which clearly wasn't true if Obama, clearly a leftist, deported greater numbers than any other president before. But the right, that didn't fit the right's narrative. Their argument was, you know, anti-immigration, close the borders, et cetera, and often they would take the stance that he was weak on immigration and weak on border patrol, when clearly that wasn't true.
Well, that, on that regard, yes. As far as enforcing the border, yes. But we also talk about the hypocrisy of the sense of the fact that Obama, under his administration, gave Mexico $75 million to help them build a border wall across their southern border with Guatemala. But now when we try to do the same thing on our country, all of a sudden it's all about xenophobia and racism and all this nonsense. But when Mexico does it, that's not a problem. And I also noticed that no one ever talked about it.
Why did Mexico build that wall?
Because they had a lot of illegal immigrants from the southern, like Central America, from El Salvador, from Guatemala, that were coming up into Mexico. And so they built that wall. So when we try to do the same thing, and we're talking about basically the same people, because most of those people who are coming from El Salvador and Guatemala into Mexico are just trying to pass through Mexico to get to America. Now, they built that wall to deal with those people. Now, when we build that same wall to deal with the same issue, all of a sudden it's a matter of xenophobia. And why? Because the Democrats know when these people come in, they're going to vote overwhelmingly Democrat as soon as they get the opportunity. And that's the whole thing to this. And we know it's true because of how the Democrats wanted to change their stance towards Cubans. Now, currently we have the wet foot, dry foot policy with Cubans. But now the Democrats want to get rid of that. Why? Because the Cubans come into Florida and vote overwhelmingly Republican. So this is a political thing, not a matter of actual national security. And I'm not going to be fooled.
I agree that the wall is a political thing, because if they genuinely wanted to solve it, instead of spending billions of dollars on building a wall, which they could or not do, it doesn't matter to me, they would go after the companies that hire them, but they don't do that. You don't hear about them heavily sanctioning all of the companies that hire illegal immigrants, because that labor is needed in this country. So I think the whole argument about a wall is either based on xenophobia or a false flag to distract people, thinking that a wall is a problem.
So drug trafficking, the exchange of weapons, and the movement of gangs is minimal to you.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But hey, if you want to talk about drug trafficking, let's talk about the CIA. You know, we don't need the wall to stop drug trafficking in this country. You know, there have been plenty of studies have shown and documentaries and proof that our own government was responsible of bringing in large quantities of drugs into this country. So that's not the panacea that we think it will be. I'm not disagreeing with you in totality, but I'm saying it's not quite that black and white. No pun intended.
Well, you know, let me say this, Michael. I mean, all of your points are well taken to a degree. I'm not surprised that anybody who says nigger, I'm not surprised by that at all. I mean, I don't, you know, if someone never said that to me, then I would, you know, said that word, then I would be surprised. But as far as xenophobia is concerned, and the liberals versus liberal, I'm both liberal and conservative. I don't consider myself either one. Actually, I'm a social justice advocate, and I'll call anybody out who's wrong. Liberals are too cerebral. Conservatives, they harbor a scorched earth policy. They'll kill anybody to get what they want, even their own kind. Just like what Trump is doing and the Republicans are trying to do by taking away the Affordable Care Act from the very people that voted for them because they thought Obamacare was what he was taking away. And that's why we talk about xenophobia, because liberals aren't the ones going around here calling people wetbacks and saying that they have calves, big calves, because they're bringing in drugs. If they have a valid argument about immigrants coming over here taking jobs, don't call them names. But when you start calling them names and degrading them just because they're different, then that is xenophobia. Mm-hmm. It is nothing else. That is xenophobia. Make a valid argument about them taking jobs that people actually want. I don't see any conservatives out in the orchards picking cherries. I don't see any conservatives out in the field picking tomatoes. I don't see any conservatives in the kitchens, in the sweatshops. I see Mexicans.
Mm-hmm. And you don't see
conservatives doing that. I don't see conservatives down there cutting the grass at Mar-a-Lago. I don't see conservatives cutting Mitt Romney's grass. I don't see conservatives is doing the lawn at somebody's house. It's Mexicans. So if they're taking a job that we're supposed to have, then we should have had those jobs before they got here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no such thing as that. And listen, drugs were in this country long before Mexicans got here. They were here long before Mexicans got here. So you can't blame that on them. Okay. Why did you know what would be the argument if Indians had what would be the argument if Indians had a wall up when these people came over and stole the land from them? Was that xenophobia because they were being called savages for trying to protect their land and being angry because people were burning their women and children in teepees as they slept? Was that xenophobia? Was it xenophobia when slaves tried to escape and being called animals because they didn't want to work for free? Was that xenophobia? Was that political? Was it xenophobia because we got mad because we got tired of being lynched? Was that political? It's the same thing now. We're just using different tools. It's the same ideology. We're just using different tools and a different way of saying it. And the people who used to wear the sheets are wearing Brooks Brothers suits now. But the thing is now we have somebody in the White House who's actually saying what people have been blowing dog whistles about.
You don't see ICE banging on the door of assorted Europeans that have been here past their visa or are working in this country illegally. I know a lot of Albanians who are here illegally. But if ICE were here to crack down on illegal immigration as a whole, you would hear stories about people from other countries getting pulled aside as well. But you don't see that. Their focus is color based. Period.
Right. You don't see conservatives getting shot in their cars because they're doing what the police officer asked them to do. I don't see conservatives getting shot in the back by police officers. I don't see conservative murderers getting off in court or not having charges brought against them. Let's talk about the real things that are happening in the streets and people whose lives are actually being affected. Politics is politics, but we're talking about people's lives. We're not talking about what people talk about in the back rooms. We're talking about what affects our lives every day.
You've been missed, Anonymous.
What Obama did, I heard about Obama deporting more people than anyone else every day that he was in office. It wasn't a hidden secret. It wasn't a hidden secret. That's why people were mad at him, and the liberals were angry with him for going against what he said he would do as a candidate. You know, but, you know, so let's talk about the real things. I mean, those might be valid concerns in a conservative circle, but we are one country. And I talk about one country and what I see, not but about what I hear. Mm. I see what I talked about. I see that every day.
Anonymous.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, you're preaching. You're preaching, and we missed you much. I want you to stay on the line for a minute. We have another caller who's been waiting for a while. Ed from 248, you want to join us?
Oh, hello.
Hey, welcome, Ed. Thank you for waiting so patiently.
Oh, no problem. Two topics I will touch on would be one with Trump and the economy, and then touch slightly on the race issue. I voted for Trump over Hillary Clinton, and my main reason was the economy and evaluating Hillary Clinton and evaluating Donald Trump. And stuff that I like that Trump has done so far, when you talk with the jobs, from meeting with the CEO and head of Lockheed Martin, jobs there. It's been 13 years since we've been able to export U.S. beef to China. He got it done in speaking fair trade with the president of China. He got that accomplished. The Foxconn jobs in Wisconsin. Now, granted, there could be some criticism about the carrier deal, but I understand where he comes from. He did what he could do with the timetable that he had. He wasn't elected till November 8th, and he got that done as president-elect. I like the fact that he scrapped the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Program, and also it doesn't get much mentioned that HBCUs, he signed the executive order, money went to there. I know he got some criticism because he questioned the constitutionality of it, you know, and then I see a lot of discrimination towards African-American conservatives. There was just a magazine here in my home state of Michigan that referred to Ben Carson as a House Negro. Mm-hmm. And then when he was president elect at that time, when Jim Brown and some others went to meet with him, I mean, all I read, a lot of the social media and the news networks through the internet referred to him as, you know, Uncle Tom's. So there's things I like about Trump. I mean, I'm not totally a big Trump fan, but then I also look, you know, at Hillary Clinton. When I look at her past, 60% of her income after leaving the White House, nearly bankrupt with Bill Clinton, came from paid speeches and books. It doesn't get mentioned much in the news with Hillary Clinton and what happened to Haiti and this Clinton Foundation, Haiti only getting 10%. And when the Haitian protesters were at the DNC convention in Philadelphia on the streets, you know, that hardly got any headlines. And then as well as me being a union member, you look at Hillary Clinton's past before she was in the White House is on the Walmart board of directors there.
Let me ask this question though.
Yeah.
What was Hillary Clinton supposed to do? Clean houses? What was she supposed to do when she left the White House? Clean houses? What was she supposed to do? What's wrong with doing giving speeches for money? People do it all the time. What's wrong with that? She wasn't selling drugs. She wasn't out here stealing people's money in fake universities.
She was stealing people's money under the Clinton Foundation with Bill.
That's not true. That's not true.
Oh, that is completely true. Why only 10% of the millions went to Haiti? No, that's not true.
That is not true. If that were true, trust me, she'd be in jail. because the conservatives would not have stood for it. As much as they hated that woman, as many times as they took her to task over Benghazi and never found anything, they were chasing a ghost. If that was real, they would have strung her up by her pumps if that was real.
But let me chime in for a second. Let me chime in for a second, because we're not talking about Obama. We're not talking about Hillary. Neither of them are in office right now. They're kind of old news. They may still be active in their political circles for some, in some respects, I'm grateful for that. But we're here to talk about what's going on in the country now. So you said that you're not 100% a supporter of Trump. What is it that he's done that you don't like? Or in what way do you think he's doing a bad job?
What way he's doing a bad job is my biggest thing is with the Affordable Health Care Act, or AKA the Obamacare, is he campaigned and he talked like this is going to be a shoo-in to fix this situation and make it better. And there's definitely problems with the Affordable Health Care Act. I mean, if you want me to get into the problems of it, that's fine, I can do it. But I'm kind of disappointed, with Trump, as well as he spoke like he's going to be able to work with these Republicans, but then you see dissension when it comes to the Affordable Health Care Act with Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and some of the others. Mm-hmm. And I want to, even as me being a conservative, and I'm sure most Democrats, I'd like to see a better plan put out for everybody. And that's a disappointment I have. And I think that the 2020 election, the biggest issue that's going to come into play is what will be done with the Affordable Health Care Act, and will he deliver on his campaign promise of putting together a better plan for the American people?
Do you believe that health care is a right or a privilege?
I believe it's a right. I believe it's a right.
And
but
so
there's the realities of the economics of it too. I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. If you believe it's a right, then what's wrong with the Affordable Care Act in your opinion?
Oh, sure. The Affordable Health Care Act, a few things. Is one, it's gotten crazy what the costs have gotten for people in states, as well as you have insurance. You have major insurance companies like Aetna that are going to be bailing out of this program. You have some states that only have one or two plans available. And those are some major problems, and like I say, I believe it is a right. Everybody should not be denied health care. American citizens should not be denied health care living here. And the plan with, the Affordable Health Care plan under President Obama went through, but there's some major problems with this, ACA, so I don't have to keep saying the whole thing. But
well,
with the ACA,
if you were an insurance and a health insurer, and say 55% of your premiums were promised to be paid by the government, but then all of a sudden the government says I'm not paying you, what would you do? Wouldn't you pull out too?
Well, you have to. I mean, if you're going to be
right.
But
guess what? That wasn't happening when Obama was in office. That didn't start happening until Trump went into office.
The fact of the matter is, the insurance companies never wanted Obamacare to succeed anyway. So it doesn't surprise me that premiums have gone up, the cost of medication has gone up. Other countries do this and it's affordable and the care that you get is exceptional. There's no reason why this country can't do it. The only reason why we can't get our grip around this is because of greed. Reggie, what do you think?
Well, there are some problems with Obamacare. And I'm going to be honest with you, before Trump came into office, there were some problems with it, especially here in Maryland, where we embraced it wholeheartedly. He probably had one of the best sign-ups that took place in this country as far as people signing up for the ACA. But what happened was that the premium started getting higher right before Obama left office, and also the deductibles. And that was the biggest complaint I was hearing in the state of Maryland. I think what could have been done when Trump came into office, the plan could have been kept as it was, but it needed to be tweaked. And I think if they had worked together to get it tweaked, I think it would be a much better plan. You know, and here in Maryland last week, we just had a major insurance company pull out in Maryland last week just because of the rising costs that didn't occur. And the uncertainty of what's going to happen with the Trump administration. You know? So I think there's, you know, a little blame to go around for everyone, but you know, we need insurance. You know, everybody deserves to have insurance, but the program has got to be tweaked.
Yeah, well, can I say this, though, about rising costs? Costs were going up before the Affordable Care Act was even put into made policy. And that's one of the reasons why the plan was put in made policy, because it wanted to stem the rise in costs. There was nothing to keep insurance companies from raising their premiums astronomically, exponentially, as they were doing. So even though the prices went up with Obamacare, it was a natural occurrence, but they weren't going up at the rate that they were going up before Obamacare. See, and I think people missed that point. Obamacare wasn't implemented to keep prices from going up. It was implemented so everybody could afford it if they went up.
Yeah,
that's what it was put in.
Let me bring things back for a second, Ed. I'm curious.
I have one other thing to ask, if I could. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was curious about your take on what occurred in Virginia and Trump's response.
Okay, a few things is I do see, and I'm totally against white supremacy, KKK, all these type of groups. I do see that there is some blame on the other side where they got violent. And one thing that's not being talked about too much is that apparently there was a stand-down order given to the police by the mayor there. And one thing that's important is that there be the law enforcement does what they can to protect the public. And as much as, you know, I hate the white supremacy, we got to protect these white supremacist protesters just as much as the counter protesters. We have to have a law and order when these groups clash and what happens. Now, as far as Trump's specific comments, I do feel he does have a valid point. When he came out, I think it was the following day, was it in Trump Plaza, if I'm not mistaken, and he says, I didn't have all the facts and information yet, and that's why I said there's some blame on both sides with this fighting and what went on. Now, did Trump make a mistake? Yes, and he should have definitely denounced and called out the white supremacy groups in this rally right off the bat, and I think that was a mistake that he made. But what I'm getting at is I do have some understanding where he's coming from as far as the facts and information, and I believe they're investigating this helicopter crash that was tied in with it too. And there's some stuff that I'm sure we're going to get more information on this in days to come.
But how do you feel about so-called neo-Nazis marching on American soil, screaming out clear Nazi propaganda, Nazi quotes, Nazi philosophy on American soil?
It's bad, serves no good. However, I say this is that with our Bill of Rights and our Constitution, and you look at our free speech, in order to have these rights, it's unfortunate that there's problems that come with it. And part of those problems are when there's hate groups, for example, let's say the KKK, that can go get a permit to go spew their BS that they're protecting under the Constitution. It's you know, the free speech is how am I getting at this? The free speech is sometimes not always going to suit our needs. You know, and it protects some of these the bad. I'm trying to word it correctly. I think of a word, but it's sad that there's these groups that are still out there and doing what they do, but unfortunately they're protected under the Constitution and Bill of Rights.
I'm of a mind that hate speech should not be protected by our freedom of speech. Look, if you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, what do you expect is going to happen when Nazis, neo-Nazis, or Klansmen are marching down the street, when you know at the end of the day their agenda is to wipe out everybody in the country that doesn't fit into their Aryan mold? That is the antithesis of American values. And I think that that should be seen as equivalent as yelling fire in a crowded theater.
You have a valid point on that. I can't disagree with you on that. You have a valid point. But can I ask you one other thing, if I could just shift topics real quick?
Sure.
There's been a lot of talk, especially with the election last November, and we got the 2020 election coming up, on the popular vote versus the Electoral College. But one solution to this problem hasn't been talked about much with the Associated Press, mainstream media. When you look at the state of Maine, and I believe the other one is Nebraska, what I like that they do, it's not a winner-take-all system with their Electoral College, and I'd like to see the states go to that, where it's not a winner-take-all system. I personally like the Electoral College, and I feel it's very important that we have it instead of a popular vote, just simply based off of we're not going to have five or six states along with, let's say, cities like Chicago and D.C. Vote and determine who our president is. It gives a voice, you know, to states like whether it's Wyoming or Idaho and, you know, the smaller states. But I'm just curious if I can get your opinion on the possibility of having more states do like Maine and Nebraska. And real quick, Maine, I believe Trump got one electoral vote and Hillary got three.
I'm of mixed mind when it comes to the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a democracy. The popular vote is supposed to win. I don't understand how the Electoral College can supersede a popular vote. I think that in a country that's supposed to be the bastion of democracy, the example set for all other countries to follow, we spend much more effort on making it as difficult as possible to vote than we do on ensuring that every citizen has the right and the access. You know, you have states that you know, try to enforce, sometimes legally, sometimes illegally, voter ID laws. You have states that, pass voter ID laws and then close a large number of their DMV offices where you can even get the ID. They've made it difficult for people to, you know, there was this one story of a 89-year-old woman, I think she was, who had to keep going to the DMV because they kept asking for additional documentation when what she had provided was more than sufficient. And so I think that there is a segment of the population, whether it's left or right, that's in a position of power, that uses that power to negatively impact democracy. And I have a problem with that. If this were a true democracy, look, you know, if 50% or more of the country votes a particular way, you have to go with it. That's just the way it is, unfortunately. And you'd like to think that the country is of sound mind when they're voting. But when an electoral college can override a popular vote, when people are standing online for 3 hours and then the place is closed and they never got an opportunity to vote, that's not a democracy. When you have gerrymandering, which doctors how the votes are counted, that's not democracy. So I don't think that we have the moral high ground where democracy is concerned. We have a lot of problems. There are more problems with our democracy than there are with Obamacare.
Well, I agree with some of what you said. I will say one thing that it's sad with the Electoral College is that, for example, if you're a Democrat in the state of Texas, you know, that morning going in to vote, where you know it's like, okay, I'm casting my vote, but you know this state's going Republican. Or if you're Republican in the state of California, knowing that, you know, that state's already going to a Democrat. But why I like how what the Founding Fathers set up and why I favor the Electoral College versus the popular vote is a voice to all 50 states, and I feel that's the fairest way. I But, you know, we're not going to agree upon everything. I just want to say thank you for taking my call and having a very cordial conversation.
Thank you, Greg. You know, it was a pleasure having you here. We welcome people with different views on the show, and not all have the courage of their convictions to call in. So I welcome you to call in anytime, Ed. Your voice is always welcome.
Thank you. Everyone have a good evening.
You as well.
Okay. Bye.
So how you doing, Reggie?
Well, it's time to shut it down. We've had a great show.
Is that time already? Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, that went fast. Tony, do you have any parting thoughts? You know you do. I can hear you giggling in the background.
I think it was a very candid conversation. Mm. I think that, you know, it's always good when you have, like you said, with Ed calling in and able to have that courage to come in and provide maybe an opposing view. And to have a conversation that is transparent, but also a respectful conversation. That's the part that I mostly enjoy. And like you said,
and Anonymous's passion.
Exactly. Well, Anonymous was really passionate. And it's been a while since I had heard from Anonymous, so it was good to hear from him. But, again, it was a good show because it was one that the views could be shared. And no one was so riled up that there was anger being ensued on either side. And that is what this conversation should be about. And I think that a lot of people can take a lesson to listening to this show because although, you know, everybody may think something different, at least we can talk about it. And that's the important part. People don't know the skill of listening nor providing a commentary and doing it in a positive nature so that you can hear either side. That's the key.
Yeah.
You have to be able to hear either side. So I think it was a good show. I think it was a really good show.
I agree. Oh, man, I'm beat now.
So yeah, I know Mr. Reggie Turney was sitting over there. I know he was biting at the bits over there, you know, because anytime he gets quiet like that, that mind is churning, man. It's churning. So, but that's a good thing. It's all food for thought, and I appreciate you guys very much. I really do. I really honestly do. So, you guys ready to get out of here?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. What? I do want to say thank you once again to those who have joined us tonight, Mr. Anonymous, as well as Ed and Michael. It was good to hear. Yeah, it was good to hear. I think he had to hang up, though. But it was really, really good to have the callers. And we just do invite them back, in 2 weeks? Yeah, every other week. I got to keep you guys' schedule, truly in my head. But we're going to get out of here. Before we do, I do want to recognize our sponsors. Because of the conversation being so spirited tonight, we didn't get to really recognize the sponsors and tell people how they can, you know, come and visit you guys and talk and join the conversation every other week. But Real World News Radio is sponsored by Shades of Africa in two locations, in the city of Corona and in the city of Long Beach. Also sponsored by the Urban Sentinel. Thank you, Mr. Reggie Kearney, your editor-in-chief. Also sponsored by SPMG Media, Ms. Gina Smith, who happens to be Hot Topics Talk Radio Network's publicist. So to make sure that we are relevant all over the country, actually. And keeping us relevant in the news, in the media. So thank you, Ms. Gina Smith. Also sponsored by SPMG Media again. Also sponsored by Knife Island Cultural Club of Las Vegas. So for more information regarding our sponsors here under the Hot Topics Talk Radio Network, head on over to the website at hottopicstalkradio.com/sponsors. Make sure that you follow Real World News right here under Blog Talk Radio. And that will be under the Hot Topics Talk Radio Network. Just by hitting the follow button here on Blog Talk Radio, you can find out everything you need to know about any of the upcoming shows. So you'll get notifications when they're coming on air. So make sure to follow them right here on Blog Talk Radio under Hot Topics Talk Radio Network. Also make sure to follow them on Facebook under Real World News. That's a lot to say in one breath, but I'm going to leave it there. You need to come on back tomorrow night here on Blog Talk Radio with Hot Topics Talk Radio with me, Tony Breedlove, as well as Mr. Roland D. Tomorrow we got a really, really good show lined up for you tomorrow night. It's one that has been talked about since yesterday on Facebook. But the topic tomorrow night, it involves, do you want to pay for a child that's not yours? That's tomorrow night's topic on Hot Topics Talk Radio. So join Roland D and I here at 8 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 10 o'clock Central, and 11 o'clock on the East Coast. Until then, we'll wish you a really good night, and we'll see you back here tomorrow night with Hot Topics Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining us, and we thank you for your continued support. Have a good night, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.
Good night.